Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. On our way to our conversation, I'm going to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. www.mecu.com, or you can click on their banner, steinershow.org. Baltimore's credit union, mecu.com. Governor Martin O'Malley announced on our show, actually, a couple weeks back at the Annapolis Summit, that the new jail was not going to be built, this youth jail in Baltimore. Then it came out last night officially that it was not going to be built. We have been covering this story since the beginning, when the leaders of A Beautiful Struggle and the Algebra Project and others led the demonstrations to say no to a new jail. We've been covering juvenile justice issues here for the last 20 years about reform in our juvenile justice system with many partners along the way. And we continue that conversation now. With us today, this first part of our program, is Sam Abed, who is, of course, Secretary of Department of Juvenile Services, and Delegate Mary Washington, both join us by phone. She represents District 43 here in Baltimore City. In the studio, Angela Janice, who is Juvenile Justice Director at Advocates for Children and Youth, Davon Love is in the studio, Director of Research and Policy of Leaders of A Beautiful Struggle. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Number here is 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And you can also join us on Twitter. Please send your tweets to @MarkSteiner. And we will see what you're tweeting out there as well, @MarkSteiner. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So, Secretary Abbott, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
And Delegate Washington, everybody else?
Thanks.
Not that everybody's less important. I'm just saying you haven't been on the show before, so I'm welcoming you to the show. But let's talk about first, very quickly. Just a second. My headphone just came out. It's back. Secretary, talk about what you think this means. What is the significance for you of the decision not to build a jail, but instead, I think, to talk about rehabbing part of the old women's jail?
Well, I think the real headline and the significance of this is that we've been very successful here at the Department of Juvenile Services, Department of Public Safety, as well, working with our local partners in law enforcement and working with our partners in the advocate community in reducing crime. And we've done so in a way not just to reduce crime, but to also reduce the utilization of detention in a very thoughtful and safe way so that we could make this plan possible. And so what you've seen now is a reduction in the detention population in the Justice Center. We're at about 50% of our capacity and about 50% of the population that we had 2 years ago. We've also seen significant reductions in the juvenile homicide rate during that time, non-fatal shootings of youth, and in addition to that, we've also seen reductions in the recidivism rate of youth in our system. So we've gotten a lot smarter about how we deal with our kids. We've realized how we can use common sense strategies, working with our partners to take some space that was available or was being used by kids that shouldn't have been in the detention center, and now make it available for kids charged as adults so that this is now a possibility. So it's a real great success for the department.
Well, two questions here, and I'll let other guests chime in, and Delegate Washington, I'll let you jump in as well in on this. I mean, there are some folks who would argue that have said that we shouldn't be rehabbing or building any new jails, that what we need is a system that jails young people less in this community. One of the things I talked to the governor about when we had our Annapolis Summit was that the vast majority of young people who are in DGS placements are there for nonviolent offense, well over 70% of them, and that we have adequate beds to take care of the numbers of people, 45 vacant beds, as Hathaway Farabee pointed out to our staff today by phone, 45 vacant beds now in the jail that exists, and that there really is no need, and that instead of building a jail, we should reinvest this money in different places and start adjudicating kids before letting them out into community corrections or some kind of pretrial facilities as opposed to placing kids in jailing children.
Well, Mark, what I'd like to say to this is that first, let's realize what a breakthrough this really has. And I think basically it is also, I think, a validation for the community, people in the community, as well as the state legislators who are working together to stop this new detention center from being built. And there are people who have been working for decades before that to really try to make some headway in addressing the policy or the consequences of the policy of charging youth as adults. So we have that. So while we still have a long way to go, and we need to continue to look at both the juvenile justice system and then also look at the policy decision and the legal decision that the Department of Public Safety would manage and house youth charged as adults, bringing together in this today that the corrections and DJS are working together is in itself a victory, and it was absolutely because of the work that the advocates have done and in collaboration with the work we as legislators did from Jill Carter putting in a bill for a moratorium, and then our budget committees putting in their requests for the study to say, hey, 180 is too big, let's have another study. They came back again and said 120. Well, we're saying, again, it's still too big. And then say, hey, you have to think of something else. Meanwhile, the Department of Juvenile Services was able to implement a lot of the recommendations in the NCCD study to begin to actually decrease the number of juveniles so that we could create a space where we can contemplate that our existing juvenile system could have the capacity to address the programming needs and the housing needs of youth charged as adults. So, you know, what I'm saying is that we should just not discount the victory. There's still it was one battle and a long war, as some people would see, but there is absolutely a victory in this announcement today.
So, let me push back a little bit on that in a moment, but I want to hear what the Secretary was about to say, and I'd like to ask both of our guests, one of whom was in the midst of leading the fight against the jail. Ms. Secretary, are you about to say what?
Yes. First, I'd just like to say that, you know, when I talk to my staff, you know, we talk about how it's our job to try and put ourselves out of business. We want to be doing such a good job rehabilitating youth that they never come back into our system, and if we can, preventing youth from ever coming into our system. So that is certainly a goal that we have. But I think to be realistic about it, we certainly realize that there's going to be crime. We can't prevent all of it. And for purposes of this discussion, we have to look at that population of youth that are charged as adults in the adult system. And the way that the law is written, we have basically three sort of subpopulations that we need to talk about. One is the subpopulation of youth that cannot be transferred back into the juvenile system. And those are kids that are charged with very serious crimes like murder and rape. And the way the law reads, those youth are not eligible for transfer. So they need to be housed in an adult facility. There's a second subpopulation of youth that emanates from the juvenile system, but where a judge or a master in the juvenile system has heard their case and decided that it must be heard in the adult system because it is a serious, more serious crime than the juvenile system can manage. And so for those youth, they have to be housed in an adult facility, and that being the case, we must provide. The state has an obligation to provide adequate conditions for them. So to come and say that we shouldn't do anything for those kids, I think is the wrong solution. We need to provide adequate and good conditions for those kids that are housed in the adult system.
So one of the questions I have for our other guests here, and let me bring you both in, because there's so many things have been brought up here. I'm going to try to get to them before Delegate Washington and Secretary Abbott have to leave. How do you see this? I mean, you were part of on the street with hundreds of other young people. How do you see?
Well, I mean, I see the new developments with the youth jail as, at the end of the day, largely symbolic. I mean, it's substantive in the sense that, you know, there isn't going to be a new facility that is built that'll spend exorbitant amounts of money, you know, locking up young people. But on the other hand, though, and what I mean when I say largely symbolic in the sense that we live in a society that is structured on injustice, right, in a society where black youth are more likely to be incarcerated for crimes that, you know, our white counterparts engage in. And that has resulted in the undermining of the quality of life of the communities that are most affected. And so a big part of the conversation needs to be the lack of investment in the livelihood of the communities that are most affected by the issue of mass incarceration. So the stopping the construction of a youth jail is just a step in the direction of kind of a broader conversation of, you know, what is it that our public officials, that our city government and state government, what is it, what is their disposition towards the general welfare, particularly of black youth in Baltimore City, who in many instances in terms of their interaction with law enforcement, with the lack of quality education that exists all over Baltimore City, the conversation needs to be how do we shift the institutional dynamics? And one of those includes the whole issue of charging youth as adults. You know, if you look at the images and representations of young black people who are likely to be incarcerated, we can't say that those who are in charge of deciding whether they get placed in adult facilities or not aren't affected by those representations of black youth that overly represent us as violent and inherently criminal and so forth. And so a part of it needs to be a conversation about that. You know, how do we engage in a transformation in our city? We learn to understand that, for the most part, young black youth aren't naturally criminal or have some kind of criminal instinct, but that they live in an unjust society that oftentimes relegates them to engage in the kind of behaviors that result in what people see as a need for the construction of a jail.
And, Mark, I think that getting to this point continues the conversation that Davon has mentioned, that we need to continue to have. Getting to this point does not stop the work that needs to go forward. I guess this morning I woke up thinking about where we are as a relay race. We've run a leg. We're not at the finish line. We recognize that there's more work that needs to be done. And with stopping the jail and getting to this juncture, I feel like it's a new day in advocacy. We saw grassroots organizations. We saw community people come to the table. We saw legislative work going forth, public policy advocacy, communication strategies. Like, there were a whole lot of things going on at the same time to get to this point. We saw improved relationships with the state agencies so that we could have a conversation about better alternatives for young people and whether or not a 180-bed facility needed to be built. And I think we have to remember, in 2010, people told us we'd never get to this point, that money was already budgeted for the youth jail. The department was ready to move forward with a 180-bed facility that could be expanded to house 240 youth. So to be at the point that we're talking about a 60-bed facility and that we're still at the table with the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Juvenile Services to talk about what else can we do to continue to move the state in the right direction is good.
I'm just only interested. Let me just push the envelope a little bit, though. And let me do it this way. I know it, and I heard what you said, Mr. Secretary, and heard what you said, Delegate Washington, and what everybody said so far. And by the way, lines are open at 410-319-8888 or tweet us at Mark Steiner. That I've been doing this on the air now for 20 years, covering reform of the juvenile justice system. Sometimes I feel like we're having the same conversation we had 20 years ago. Two, I worked in this system and worked in this work 40 years ago in pretrial programs at work that no longer exist in our system, where kids came to us for 3 to 6 months of intensive counseling, world of work, education, low recidivism rates for first and second time nonviolent offenders. Instead of being put in anybody's institution, they were in places where there were counselors, psychologists, teachers, ex-felons working with young people, and they worked. So my question is, for starting with the secretary, are we still asking the wrong questions? We're talking about building facilities, treatment facilities. We're not even sure that some people would argue that juvenile services, with all due respect, doesn't do that great a job in terms of treating our kids who have mental health needs. We have to even define what we mean by mental health needs with kids coming off the street. So I mean, so I understand what you were saying as well, Delegate, about, you know, we have to look at this as a step forward. But I think some of us out here are saying, we've been taking these baby steps for a long time. What does it take to turn a system around that doesn't incarcerate 70% of the kids in the system who did not commit a violent crime?
Well, Mark, if I could just, there's a number of things I'd like to respond to.
Go ahead, Secretary.
First, I'd like to just say that investing in the community is important, and those investments need to be made, and the state has made significant investments in the Baltimore City community, and I would support additional investments into the community. However, we cannot throw away those youth that are in the system, and we do have to treat them appropriately, and I just want to make that clear that no matter, they're not mutually exclusive concepts, but investing in the community doesn't mean we don't take care of the kids that are in the system. So I think that the state needs to do both. With respect to the state of affairs with the department and the delivery of treatment programs, we have improved significantly. And I think that our statistics bear this out. And this is not something that can happen, or you don't turn a ship around in no time. But in the 2 years that I've been here, we've seen the population driven down in the Juvenile Justice Center by over 50%. That's not a small baby step. That's a tremendous, tremendous accomplishment. While we've driven that population down, we've also driven down the number of youth that are victims of homicides, which was an epidemic and is still a problem, but we've driven it down significantly. We've driven down the number of non-fatal shootings by 50% on these numbers. I mean, these are significant reductions in the incidence of violent crime and homicides, which are our most serious offenses. And with respect to delivery of treatment programs, the department is capable of delivering excellent treatment programs, but what we need to do is implement the model that the state has articulated is our model, which is small, regionally located, state-operated treatment facilities. And that's why we're pushing forward, and we want to have a treatment facility located here in Baltimore so that those kids that are receiving treatment can receive their treatment nearby their homes. And it's not just for those kids in the residential treatment. We also have youth that are in alternatives to commitment. Those are the evidence-based services that we've implemented. These kids would be in an out-of-home placement, but for the fact that they were placed in these evidence-based services. And we utilize these services to the extent possible because they have models, they have a profile of youth that it works for, and for those youth, we do place them in those types of programs. But we also have to consider the public safety need, and if a kid is a risk to the community, then those community models don't always work. So we need to have a mix, a range, or a continuum of services for the youth in our city and in our state.
I think the issue, and I think it's really important to highlight this, the issue is it's paradigmatic in the sense that we're not talking just about isolated facts and data about, you know, the state of youth homicides or, you know, in terms of placement. I think for example, we talk about the disproportionate minority contact. This is a new term that the state has coined as a way to talk about mass incarceration. The problem with that is that it doesn't acknowledge the fact that there's a fundamental injustice in our society in terms of the institutions and how they are arranged to disproportionately undermine the quality of life of black youth in Baltimore City. And so while those things aren't meaningless, right? Those statistics aren't meaningless, right? But what I think what's important to remember here is that the goal should be to improve the quality of life and understanding the larger phenomena, primarily that of racism and white supremacy, that have denigrated the communities in Baltimore and around the country in many ways that, unfortunately, a lot of those public officials who are administering these kinds of services don't have an expertise in and haven't taken the time to understand it is central to the question of why the communities are the way they are. If you don't understand the nature of racism and white supremacy in our society to explain why these disproportionate minority contact happens, if that's not the center of the conversation, then we're going to continue to be chasing stats instead of substantively improving the quality of life in the community. And one last thing I want to say, just in terms of looking at Youth Justice Sunday that we did October 31st of 2010, you know, it was a demonstration where, you know, we flew the Pan-African flag. It was centered on the issue of black people coming together and wanting to take control of our institutions, articulating the issue and the problem from our vantage point. And I think that's what made this activism on the UGL unique, is that we had that presence, that energy within the advocacy. And I think that's the direction that I think we need to go.
And if I may,
I'm after you, just limit a little bit because we only have like 5 or 6 more minutes in this segment. But go ahead, Mary. And Reverend Yuri has just joined us by phone from Atlanta.
Oh, that's great. That's really great. Just the first thing is, one of the things that is, I think, very special and important is that there is a coalition of people doing what they do best in efforts to reform the system of how we support our youth and how we provide opportunities for youth in our city. And so in the letter, the joint letter to the governor, and in our meetings to the governor, in our meetings with the secretaries, we have, in fact, reiterated the facts about African Americans and youth of color disproportionately affected by the system, that we know that, you know, committing similar crimes, that youth are charged differently, they're arrested differently. We know and are keenly aware of all of the structural racism that affects and has created the juvenile justice system in the U.S. and the justice system in the U.S. So we are, in fact, more than keenly aware. And what we also stipulated in our letter was a continued dedication, a united all of the Baltimore City delegation and all of the Black Caucus working together to implement the very alternatives to incarceration, the opportunities for empowerment and internships. We took the documents that have been provided and circulated by the advocates, incorporated into our statement of purpose and mission, and be assured that when I say this is a step, it's not like a baby step and now we can go rest. It's actually the goal and the motivation, because it is a success. When you were told 3 years ago it could never happen, that you can take things off the book, you can turn the ship around. And so, you know, well, I just wanted to just be very clear that while we're happy that this item has been deleted from the budget, we are under no perception that the problem about how we treat young people in our city and our state and the conditions that they're living in.
I'm sorry, Dolly. Before we have to go to break, let Reverend Yuri call in and have a say.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
This morning, I think we recognized just how shoddy the juvenile justice system is in the state of Maryland. Because we have great structural impediments to really having a comprehensive plan, the Secretary Abbott and Secretary Maynard really have a difficult job. I think at the beginning of the press conference, they began by identifying that they could only work with the part that fell under their jurisdiction. So there's structural issues about how we process young people, how we assign them to adult court and then have them waived back, how do we approach the whole thinking around juvenile justice systemically. And if we're trending in the right direction, if these arrests are going down, if violent crime's going down, if all of these things are taking place, then now what we need to do is expand the scope and look at what else now needs to be done legislatively in terms of capital investments in the neighborhoods, in the education, in the support structures for these young people, to make sure that these are not just flash-in-the-pan improvements, but that these are sustainable and expanding improvements over time. The NCCD report, I think, is clear. Over the next 3 decades, the need for expanded incarceration beds is not going to be there. Let's keep doing, if we say this is working, let's do it using a gambling term, since we expanded gambling, let's double down in favor of our young people and come up with a systemic approach that is healthy and holistic in the long term.
And I just want to take a few seconds to say there is a 5-bill legislative package that is continuing on this work. I know we're short on time, but you can contact, this is Angela at ACY. You can see the package on our website, www.acy.org, or you can contact me directly, contact information on website.
And what I will say here, and I know, Mr. Secretary, you have to leave, and I appreciate you taking the time here today. I'm going to come back and invite you back on again for a longer discussion when you have the time.
Absolutely.
It's been a pleasure to have you with us, and Delegate Washington has to go as well. And let me just say, what we are going to try to do is We'll take a break here, but we are going to commit ourselves to doing a series of meetings in the community to wrestle with this and talk about it with all the players about where we go. From Leaders New Beautiful Struggle, Algebra Project, ACY, ministers like Reverend Urie and Reverend Brown, Safe and Sound, everybody invited to the table to kind of, and legislative leaders to talk about what we do and how we change it.
I would be delighted to participate in that discussion.
Thank you, Mr.
We'll
Secretary.
We'll absolutely be there.
Thank you.
So we're going to take a very short break, and I want to thank Secretary Abbott for joining us here, and also Delegate Mary Washington for joining us. Thank you both so much. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner reminding you on the way back to our conversation. The Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or 877-462-7555. We continue our conversation about the announcement, official announcement, that was made unofficially at the Annapolis Summit by the governor, that the new juvenile detention center will not be built. The question is, what does that mean and where does it go from here? We heard from the Secretary of Juvenile Services earlier. Delegate Mary Washington was with us. Davon Love was in the studio. We are now joined by Adam Jackson, who is Chief Executive Officer of the same organization, Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Good to have you in the studio.
Thanks, Mark.
We are also joined here in studio by Rashad Hawkins, organizer for the Just Kids Partnership. Good to have you with us, Rashad.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us by phone is Tyrone Barnwell from Safe and Sound. We also have with us on the phone continue Reverend Todd Urie of Douglas Memorial Church. And, of course, is Delegate Carter there? She's not there? Oh, we're waiting for Delegate Carter. And the Reverend Heber Brown joins us once again as well from Mount Pleasant Baptist Church. And good to have you all with us. So this is pushing this envelope a tad further. And I heard what you were saying, Todd. And I one of the things that and I was going to try to get to find the statement I had here to read from Hathaway Fairview, who wrote from Safe and Sound today, who sent a statement to us. But one of the things that I remember 3 or 4 years ago, when Safe and Sound was one of the underwriters for our Annapolis Summit, they were then pushing, and still are pushing, the idea that of a compact, this compact that would use the money differently to be spent in the city of Baltimore rather than building a jail, to invest those capital investments and other investments in keeping kids out of jail and training kids and making this a more positive environment rather than an environment where we adjudicate and put kids in prison. And I looked at that. I reread that compact today on my way into this conversation. It still makes sense to me, that compact. The governor and I got into a really intense argument about it 4 years ago, or 3 years ago, whatever that was. But it still makes sense. The question is, we're still. I said this during the break. That we talk about there are 45 empty beds now, and there are about. I've done the math completely, but there are like 3,000. Young children in the state of Maryland who only committed misdemeanors, no felonies, no violent crimes, that are in jail. Where is the system that addresses those kids and doesn't imprison them? I've been saying this for 20 years in the air. I'll say it again. So, Reverend Urie, let me start with you, and we'll go around the room very fast. But I mean, to me, that's the problem. We keep talking about it, but we're not addressing why we're incarcerating rather than treating and taking care of kids who are in there for nonviolent offenses.
Well, I think it goes to the whole perspective. It came up in the press conference today that the approach to the remedy of the detention center in the first place was really for a Baltimore City problem. And so now we have to drill down and look at the dynamics of Baltimore City. You have a crumbling educational infrastructure. You have massive unemployment and underemployment. You have the absence of job training opportunities, and there really is no revival of any industry to speak of that will allow these neighborhoods to become economically sustainable over the long haul. Until we take a systemic approach of understanding all of the contributing factors that put pressures on family systems, on young people, to potentially consider engaging in what we might call criminal behavior, we're going to continue to have this issue. So we got to make sure that, you know, just saying, all right, we're not going to build a new facility, we're going to come up with a modern rehab, well, that's still not good. We've got to make sure that what we're raising as the remedy is addressing the right question, and the questions have to be comprehensive, and the strategies have to be bold. I believe that if we use the governor's previous demonstration of his political will around the DREAM Act and marriage equality, we know he has the ability and the desire to do so. Let's leverage and encourage him to continue to do and take a comprehensive look at what these opportunities are, and I think it makes sense to include compacts as part of that broader conversation.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all. I don't disagree with Reverend Urie at all. I think that the issue is that we think we're addressing the problem with certain programs and interests. And the problem is that we're not asking ourselves, the way that we're trying to fix the problem, is that wrong? Is the way we're trying to deal with that? And this is kind of where we were trying to take the conversation a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the youth jail issues, that typically when people think about, you know, incarceration and trying to trying to rehabilitate youth, we just think about, we just need a treatment center, and then, you know, that'll fix it. And the problem is that we're not asking ourselves deeper questions, like who controls the programming in the treatment centers? Who benefits the most from these treatment centers? Who gets the most financial benefit from those treatment centers? And I think those are the questions we need to ask ourselves. We all know it's systematic. We all know it originates from racism and white supremacy. But the issue is how do we go about fixing it? And I would suggest is that we need to start thinking about ways that we can get the community to control these centers where we say we want youth to be treated. And we need to start offering comprehensive services from community organizations, because the biggest problem is that we have folks from people who are outsiders to Baltimore, or who don't have no investedness in Baltimore, running organizations, coming in, running these centers or running these programs, and these youth don't get rehabilitated to the place where they can go leave and be contributing members, get jobs, things like that. And we think we're fixing it. And I think that's the bigger issue. And I would call that issue the nonprofit industrial complex, because typically, you know, we leave that up to the nonprofits. And there's lots of issues with that, you know, because those folks typically aren't invested in the communities, and that leads down us the long path of they're not effective, and then we don't fix those problems with our youth.
So let me do this. Let me go around the room here. Let me go to Tyrone Barmore, who's from Safe and Sound. Tyrone, go ahead, then we'll come over to Rashad, okay? Tyrone?
Mm-hmm. Great. Good evening, everyone. Mark Steiner, thank you for having me on the show.
Pleasure to have you here.
To what Adam said, we totally agree with that. What Safe and Sound has been doing, I, as the lead organizer and the youth ambassador group, have been going to different community organizations, starting with the community associations, finding out from the community associations what do they want in their community, where would they like for funding to go, and having them claim, put in the application to claim a portion of the jail funds. Safe and Sound will not get, does not want to, you know, have any of the money. We don't want to distribute any of the money or anything at all. We've not ever advocated that. That's not what we want to advocate, but we are absolutely doing that. Actually, when I was on a show with Pastor Heber Brown, I showed him a list of different organizations who we were going to, who we actually had claiming a portion of the jail funds. He mentioned a great group, a great boxing group, and I went right to the list and showed him this is one group who we're already working with. So that's our key, you know, that's our job, that's our position, that's where we are. We're in the streets every single day talking to community folks, asking them what do they want in their community, what are their needs. We also have them to identify themselves as a resource. And then we work together, you know, to get them to do that. So if there's folks out there who are interested in learning more about it, please contact me. I would, you know, love to leave my contact information for folks, because that's what
we can do that.
So it's tbarnwell@safeandsound.org. That's my email address. You can email me. I can get you the application. I can help you fill out the application and show you the process. And as you said, bring all of us to the table. If you wouldn't mind, I would like to add the other community groups who we're already working with to bring them on board, too, so that we can actually hear from the community, and it's not just the advocates talking about the communities, but we'll actually see the community groups that we are already working with.
Let me, before we come back to Adam, I know we promised to go over here to Rashad, and let's let's hear from Hebrew and go back to Adam. Is that right?
Yeah, sure.
Let's go to Rashad, then we'll come.
We haven't heard
from him yet.
Okay, so I think what we need to keep in mind, what's important, is one of the reasons that we were opposing this jail, and that was that if this jail was constructed, it would promote policies and practices that are ineffective and harmful to young people in Maryland. With that in mind, now that we stopped this facility, we can start looking to change those policies. And as Angela mentioned, there will be a legislative package introduced this session that will work to address.
Who's introducing it?
The Maryland Youth Justice Roundtable. It's a roundtable of a lot of organizations that are working to introduce this legislation. And to answer your question, Mark, part of that package, it will be some legislation introduced this session that will create clear standards on who we incarcerate. So if that is passed, you will be seeing fewer young people going to jail.
And Heber, do you want to jump in before we get a phone call in here and free up a line so we can get Delegate Carter in?
Well, sure, sure. Just let me say this real quickly that I wholeheartedly agree with Adam in the sense of, and others have kind of suggested this as well, that I believe that while today is historic on many levels, and even as we are all on the line tonight, I can't help but to think about the non-credentialed, undegreed folks who have been pushing for this thing for years as well. I mean, we all have the privilege of being on the microphone speaking to thousands of people, but they are grandmothers and bus drivers and secretaries and clerks and so many others who, without their effort, without their energy, we will not be here today. And so I just want to make sure we keep that in mind as we, even as we celebrate those who are used to airtime and cameras, we want to make sure we remember them. But I think Adam is so correct that we have to also address the social arrangement that allows for the perpetuation of African people in Baltimore, black people in Baltimore being subject to the benevolence of others. And so even if you have a group that has a great mission statement to do some good in the city, if it maintains the system of control that keeps everyday common black folk in Baltimore dependent on others, that's less than a victory. And so, for instance, you got this group in Carroll County, the Silver Oak operation that's going on, the Silver Oak Academy, that's run by a rites of passage group out of Nevada somewhere. And they're coming into Maryland running this program for largely black youth. Those types of things we have to continue to analyze. And so I would just hope that as we move forward, as Rashad talks about the policies and Tyrone talks about organizations that I totally agree, they need to be at the table. But more than at the table, they need to be controlling the resources. And that's where I think the tables will begin to turn, when everyday common folk are controlling the economies and the politics of their own communities and that not being outsourced to people who think they know better.
So I think that, and I think, let me just read this statement here and then get a phone call and go right to Adam, who wants to jump back in. But this is the statement Hathaway Fairby sent this afternoon when she wrote to us that she would not come on tonight. But she said, new or old jail, it is a jail and a campaign that opposes the state's recommendations to spend $30 million to increase jail cells for Baltimore City's African-American youth, particularly as the Department of Juvenile Services reports that approximately 45 beds are empty in the Baltimore City Juvenile Justice Center, where the youth in the BCDC can be safely and legally held. We find the state's PR headlines to be misleading and call upon the governor to explain why he persists in spending tax dollars to lock up African-American youth. We continue to call for a real victory where we go beyond moderating devastating acts of structural racism and leap forward to reuse the jail funds that increases our young people's access to affirmative opportunity. We are responding to a deluge of calls from those determined to secure these jail funds for effective alternatives to detention and affirmative opportunity, and are calling upon our elected representatives to genuinely deliver that to our youth. Adam, you know, I know there was some tension, and I want to get into the tension right now, but in many ways, it sounds like folks are closer than they're not.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even listening to her statement, I mean, there's not a lot that anybody, I don't think, that the advocates would disagree with. I think we're all on the same page that, one, there does not need to be a new jail, I mean, any capacity whatsoever, and that, two, that there are empty beds, and that youth that are in charge of adults could potentially go down to the current Baltimore City Youth Juvenile Detention Center. I don't think anybody disagrees on that. I think that there's a lot of I think that the crux of the difference is that the reason why the jail isn't being built is because that there was a lot of the people who are most affected by this jail control were allowed to lead the movement, and those people that were in control were black folks. And that's the thing. That's the distinction between what people are talking about in terms of. I think that's where a lot of the tension lies, is that people think that there's all these differences when it's really not. I think we're all on the same page. It's just that the reason why we need to start dealing with the actual issues, and it requires especially white people that see themselves in this liberation struggle as folks who are used as resources to see themselves like where they sit in this dialogue. And I think that that's an issue we need to deal with. We shouldn't be talking about differences that we don't really have.
But Reverend Urey, and Reverend Urey, I think we have Jill Carter about to come in the air, but very quickly, Reverend Urey, I mean, one of the things that you and I have talked about is in some ways, the political battle has taken place, the inside and the out. The inside and the out. I mean, clearly the jail would not have been stopped had not hundreds of young African Americans and then later young white kids from Occupy come in and say, no, this is not going to happen. And that kind of made advocates and professional kind of advocates come up and say, We want to help stop it from the inside, but if the street hadn't started, this jail would not have been stopped. But it's a process. Just talk a bit about your thoughts on that.
Well, I think there are a couple of things. There's process, and then there is the sustainability of engagement. To some of the earlier points, I do not ascribe to the exclusivity of who can engage in a liberation struggle.
That's right.
Number one, this is the Mark Steiner Show. Last time I checked, Mark, you're very kind and you're good on the fellowship, but you don't really fall in the category of brothers. So number one,
I think that
there are multiple communities and voices and stakeholders who are in the liberation struggle for the right reasons, and they should all be embraced, and they should be all invited to participate. Not that they're given primary or sole voice, but everybody's got to be part of this solution because it is a systemic and deeply embedded systemic issue that everybody's got to ante up and put their capital on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other piece is that, you know, we do, if we were having this conversation, I think when you had your Wednesday morning conversation, one of our state leaders was all for the new detention center and came with a package of benefits that would come with it. It would be state of the art, and there'd be a good education. I think everybody knows that some of the key things that are up against Baltimore City youth is that we have an eroding and crumbling dysfunctional educational system. The buildings don't fit. We don't have support systems in place. And so instead of saying, if I want black kids in Baltimore City to get a good education and have good, sustainable treatment, I need to put them in a system somewhere, some institution. So we've got to change the paradigm of how we think about this. Everybody, I don't care if you're blue, purple, green, yellow, everybody get engaged, put your capital on the table, and let's figure out how we're going to work in the best interest of the young people who need some serious, legitimate advocates at the table.
Let me turn it to Delegate Jill Carter, who's just gotten through. She's busy on the floor, and she's joined us here for the last part of our program. Delegate Carter, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you on the air with us, Jill Carter. So talk a bit about, from your perspective, we've had a ranging discussion here with lots of people who have a stake in this, about what this means, how much it means to stop the jail, but how much it means that where we still have to go, whether we should be satisfied or unsatisfied with what just happened.
Well, I think that's definitely some satisfaction that should be had on behalf of the advocates and the leaders that basically saw this as a big issue and championed the cause, and now we have zero money in the budget, so that's clearly something to be happy about. However, I think it's very important what we do now and what happens now. I think that it's critical that we, one, look at the reforms the system needs in terms of not charging youth as adults automatically and not detaining youth when it's not necessary, period, and figuring out how we can accommodate this population within the juvenile justice system. I think the other issue that I think I heard a little bit of discussion about this, but I apologize, I could not hear hardly any of the show, so I don't want to repeat or
it's all right.
Anything anyone said, but I mean, I think that there was some discussion about resources, and of course we need to focus on the front end and not the back end. In a city that still allows children to be lead poisoned, we have a long way to go at prevention and keeping people out of the system. But one of the things that we proposed, the caucus and the delegation, is an oversight committee that works, that has people directly in the communities where the youth, this population is derived from, to figure out the best use of resources for prevention.
One thing I was actually going to add, I wanted to actually formally thank Jill Carter, Delegate Jill Carter, for all of her work against the youth jail. And she's been one of the most consistent and, you know, one of the most consistent champions in terms of the advocates working on this issue. So that's the first thing. But the second thing I wanted to say is that I think that in addition to what Delegate Carter said, and that in terms of this being a victory and how we need to move forward, I think this also sends a signal to our black youth in the city, because it's not like it was just youth at marches and then we stopped being a
right.
part of the process.
Right.
The difference between this movement and other things that have been happening in Baltimore is that black youth were a part of the entire process. And from the beginning at the protests and the marches all the way up to the hearings and talking to the people who were in charge of these different departments and agencies. And the thing is, that's what we need to start doing in Baltimore. We need to have black youth involved from the beginning to the end, and not just call them out to the rallies, not have them at meetings and prod them out. We need to start substantively involving youth. And I think this is a good example of how we start doing that, because on one hand, I'm extremely happy there's not going to be a new jail built, like a brand new jail built. But I'm also smart enough to understand that this is, I mean, for various political reasons, Governor Martin O'Malley decided not to build it. And so I'm not so young that and naive to believe that's what he's altruistically not building a jail in Baltimore City. So I think that it just represents a signal to our youth that they can be involved in this process the entire time and that they will get things done. And it took us, not just us, like Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, but all the folks who've been involved in this fight. It took us a while to get to this point. And now, Angela Jolie said earlier, it's part of a marathon. It's like a marathon. You got to pass the baton. You got to keep it rolling, and you got to make sure you succeed at the very end. You get what you want, which is community control and keeping young people out of jail in the city.
So let me ask you all where you think. We have maybe 6 minutes left here, and everybody's had a little bit to say because we had so many people on the last couple of hours trying to give every corner of this struggle to stop the jail a voice at some level here, as well as having the state have their voice in the first part of this program. But where do you think we go from here? I mean, what happens now?
Now is that we work at engaging the governor and legislative leadership in the reforms needed in the system to stop the over-detention, overcharging, over-arresting, over-detaining, and overcharging of youth as students and youth as adults. We change the system, which obviates the need for a jail or even a renovation of a new facility in the adult system. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, we look at what we need to do in the communities with the community input, as Adam said, with youth involvement at every level to figure out how we give the adequate measures, adequate resources to those communities to prevent youth from being detained. And we look at alternatives to detention at every level.
As we go through here, there's something a colleague of ours here at Morgan State University who has been involved in many things, Ray Winbush,
mm-hmm.
Wrote a statement. Let me just read his statement that he wrote. This is a major victory for Baltimore. Hats off to Heber Brown, Davon Love, Adam Jackson, Maryland State Delegate, Jill Carter, and all the other community activists, politicians, and ministers for blocking the building of yet another facility for warehousing our youth. The struggle continues to make sure that an equal amount of funds that would have gone to the youth jail be set aside for providing education and recreational facilities for our Baltimore youth, is what Ray posted on Facebook. So I want you to that, because that's part of what you're talking about in terms of this legislative package.
Right. As your listeners know, Mark, we are in the beginning of the legislative session, and it's an opportunity for listeners, young people, everybody to engage in the legislative process. Next Thursday and Friday, the Department of Juvenile Services will have their budget hearing before the House Appropriation Committee and the Senate Budget and Tax. That's an opportunity to weigh in, whether you're calling your legislator, you're writing your legislator, you are communicating where you want money to go for youth services. And I think one thing we have to remember is not just juvenile services and public safety, but we have to encourage our departments of education, our governor's office for children, all the systems that are coming in contact need budgets that fund the programs that we know work for young people. And that hopefully this is a continuation of a conversation, and that we have momentum to keep moving forward and to continue to make progress that keep our children safe and happy and that keep our communities safe.
So what I can say here for sure, and should we get a kind of quick thought from everybody? Let me do this very quickly. A quick thought from Heber Brown and a very quick thought from Tyrone Barnwell.
Mm-hmm. Well, just very quickly, Mark, thank you so much for your efforts in this as well. I totally recognize the fact that many, many, many people have been a part of this at different stages and phases. It's been my inclination, however, to raise up those who are not often invited, who are not often celebrated. And I appreciate, Mark, you giving treatment and giving respect to the rich tapestry of this effort. If people listen closely, there are distinctions in the different approaches to this thing that you've heard tonight. While I appreciate everybody's engagement, I understand that, as Angela Johnny said, this is a marathon and we're ready to run it. And as long as we keep focused on that goal, of what that goal is in terms of, I agree with Adam Jackson, community control of resources, then I am excited. This is not the big victory, but it is certainly a good day.
It certainly is a winning, a battle won. The victory is yet to be held. Tyrone Barnwell, a very quick thought. We have about 90 seconds left.
Absolutely. Great. I think we take this opportunity here now and continue to work with community folks to have them claim their money. I feel like we all should work together to get the money. I unfortunately do not feel as great as everyone else with this, because I do feel that a jail is a jail, whether it's brand new or it's fixed up. It does not matter. It's a jail, and it's not needed. The $30 million that's going to be used to rehab this facility could also be spent on opportunity for those same African-American kids that will be locked up in that detention center. So I apologize, and I appreciate everyone being excited about this. But for me personally, it's not there yet, because it's just decorating a problem.
Well, let me just say here on the Mark Steiner Show what we intend to do. We're going to keep this issue on the front burner. We are going to work with our partners here to use their facilities and their help to kind of create meetings in the community where we can actually talk about this, push this ahead with all the stakeholders, and maybe we can actually finally see in this state, not just a city, but in this state, a real reform of a juvenile services system that doesn't incarcerate massive amount of young men of color and young women of color in that system, and we find alternatives to that and put money into our communities so that kids don't get in trouble in the first place. There are opportunities for kids to learn skills, have a place to have recreation centers, and places where they can get the kind of psychological help they need when they need it. And so I want to thank everybody who's been here today, Adam Jackson and Davon Love from Leaders of the Beautiful Struggle, Angela Jonice and Rashad Hawkins from Advocates for Children and Youth, who were in the studio here, the Reverend Todd Yeary, the Reverend Heber Brown, Tyrone Barnwell from Safe and Sound, Delegate Jill Carter and Delegate Mary Washington, and, of course, Secretary Sam Abbott, who is Secretary of Juvenile Services, for joining us for this intense hour-long discussion today. We'll come back to it next week. Thank you all for being in the studio and being on the phone with us.
Thank you, Mark. Hey,
thank you.
Good to be here. Thanks, Mark.
And, folks, we are going to take a break. When we come back from this break, we are going to go sound bites. Time to check on changing our food system. Don't go away.